We're the only government in the entire world that really can print dollars. And why are we not printing dollars to buy Bitcoin?
You know, it's interesting that you brought up like essentially printing money to buy Bitcoin, because it seems like that's this strategy Michael Saylor has started to implement.
You know, here's the thing. I don't think anybody owns the ETF yet. You know, I spend a lot of time with people who are wealth managers or foundation advisors, and none of them are even thinking about the ETF. So I don't think anyone owns it. I'm thrilled by, you know, Trump embracing Bitcoin mining and getting on stage and saying that he's going to take Elizabeth Warren down. It's about time. I have long said that, you know, I think she is the largest threat to national security. It isn't a foreign entity. It's Elizabeth Warren who has...
Bing bong. I am back with another edition of the State of Bitcoin podcast, where I've got Lisa Huff in the house, live and in the flesh. Or, well, I guess virtually now. But we're going to dive into a bunch of different topics, including the regulations and everything like that surrounding it. But you have a background in traditional finance. You have some... You know, some managing partner stuff with the ETFs and some of the Bitcoin regulation stuff. So I want to kind of start it off the bat. How are you looking at the new ETFs being launched and rolled out with the massive amounts of inflows? Are you seeing it as a surprise that traditional finance and the average Joe is getting so much into Bitcoin so quickly with the launch of these ETF products?
I love your energy. Thank you for having me, Brandon. So I sit on an advisory board for Melanian Digital. They're a Paris-based ETF, the first regulated ETF in Paris, offering, you know, kind of Bitcoin, fully Bitcoin, but it's Bitcoin miners and other infrastructure components to this ETF. So thank you for having me. You know, here's the thing. I don't think anybody owns the ETF yet. I'm super excited, I guess, that it's here because it legitimizes our cause. But, you know, I spend a lot of time with people who are wealth managers or foundation advisors, you know, kind of that community. And none of them are even thinking about the ETF. They haven't even begun to, you know, they claim that their clients don't even ask them about it. So I don't think anyone owns it. I don't think it's even caught on. And I find that to be hugely bullish.
Wow, that's amazing. So it is looking like then we're still early. And it's interesting you say that because of the amount of net inflows that we've seen into the ETF. I mean, just recently we've seen, you know, some massive weeks. We even saw like 16,000 worth of purchases in one day. Total net inflows are at 15 billion. So, I mean, that sounds like a lot, but, you know, in the traditional finance space, that's still a minuscule amount. So, you know, I guess, what do you think is like kind of holding back people from kind of, I guess, jumping full-fledged into Bitcoin as it's been the best performing asset since basically its since existence?
I don't know. Lack of curiosity. They're stuck in the matrix. They don't care. Their lives are fine. You know, any of those things. I literally had dinner on Sunday night with an advisor to a very large foundation in Houston. And I said, you know, surely those guys are asking you about Bitcoin. And he said, no. I said, but aren't they like a little bit curious about Bitcoin? I mean, it is the best performing asset of all time. Are they at least, you know, making an inquiry? No. I'm like, are you thinking about it? No. I'm like, well, why? And he said, well, you know, the foundation has this program and that program, and this is how we do it. And, you know, his his other clients he describes as the idle rich. So I don't know if their brains are idle. I don't really know what that means. I don't understand how you can't be thinking about Bitcoin. But on the other hand, I do understand how you can't be thinking about it, because people have a lot of stress in their lives and a lot of things are going wrong for us as Americans. And clearly we have it the best of any country on earth. So I think that's bullish, right? I don't think that anyone's really here in Bitcoin yet. I think it's just this echo chamber of you and I and our friends.
Yeah. And that's interesting you say that, but I think it's starting to go a little bit more mainstream now because we're seeing the politicians start to talk about it, right? I mean, maybe it's the echo chamber, but we've seen the clips of Trump talking about Bitcoin, you know, saying how he doesn't want Elizabeth Warren to take it. And now the Biden administration is kind of doing a 180 on Bitcoin and crypto to a greater extent. So, you know, do you think that that is going to maybe shift the narrative a little bit where more people are going to look at it? Or do you think it's just kind of like a minute talking point in this upcoming election where, you know, where they're trying to get some more votes? I mean, because at the end of the day, that's what all these politicians want, votes to stay in power. So is it that they're going after maybe the single issue voters? Or do you think that it's going to be another touch point for, you know, maybe the general population to start to get, I guess, Bitcoin curious?
Time will tell. I'm thrilled by the Trump, Trump embracing Bitcoin mining and getting on stage and saying that he's going to take Elizabeth Warren down. It's about time. I have long said that, you know, I think she is the largest threat to national security. It isn't a foreign entity. It's Elizabeth Warren who has diverted the conversation in such a direction that it's been derogatory towards this, you know, technological innovation, but way past technology, a way for us to strengthen the national security of the United States, right? If you think about what makes a country strong, you think, military, economic strength, and then your diplomatic alliances around the world. And for us to allow so much of the conversation around Bitcoin mining to be negative, I think it's just, it's been disappointing that we are the innovators of the world, that we are the creators of, you know, the Apple iPhone, that we invented electricity, that we've had all these remarkable things that have moved humanity forward over time, and yet we're ignoring the one that really moves the needle for all 8 billion people. So I'm thrilled that Trump has come out and been so strong, and that he's met with was meeting in at Mar-a-Lago with the Bitcoin miners. Apparently that went swimmingly well, and they were impressed and he was impressed. You can think what you want about Trump. You can think what you want about Biden, but, you know, there is no debate. Bitcoin is the best thing to ever grace this planet. And I think, you know, as my LinkedIn says, like, Bitcoin fixes almost everything.
No, 100%. And, you know, I agree, right? We need to try to make Bitcoin more, our policies more friendly to Bitcoin, in the United States. And there's been a recent development, right? We've seen a lot of Lightning wallets leave the US, Wallet of Satoshi, Moon, and everything like that. And so it seems like there's almost been an attack from the SEC, the Fed, all that on the Bitcoin banking system, right? Like, kind of being able to take control of that ownership. Is that how you view it, as policies like have previously kind of rolled out because of the required the stringent KYC requirements and that kind of movement? And do you think that this, Trump and Biden kind of flipping on Bitcoin and crypto to try to bring more innovation back into the US will almost flip the script on that? Or do you think that they basically just want to know whatever transactions you're doing so the tax man could always get their cut?
Well, look, I mean, I think that they have a lot of problems that they're trying to solve for, the enormous debt, you know, being at the top of the list. And you've got Janet Yellen out there saying, you know, well, we really can't reduce spending. You really can't cut defense spending. Well, you really can't cut retirement benefits. Well, you really can't cut entitlements. So that means an increase in taxes are inevitable. You know, do I think that they are directly coming after the Bitcoin wallet companies? I guess, I mean, how much Bitcoin are we actually really holding in those wallets though? Right. To me, I mean, I cleaned up my, my iPhone yesterday and, you know, just deleted apps that I don't use anymore. Like I've parked in a city and downloaded an app, you know, deleted all that stuff. And I probably have, I don't know, 5 or 7 Bitcoin wallet apps, none of which do I have more than, I don't know, certainly not more than $100 of Bitcoin in. So, I mean, like, what are we even really talking about? What is the, I mean, I understand that they're still taking our privacy away or they're still, it's an invasive tactic, but I don't mind paying the tax man. I think that if we're Americans, we have accepted that we pay taxes. I think now we just have the ability to hold our leaders accountable for what those taxes are going towards. And I think us in the Bitcoin community are trying to say, hey, you know, there is a way out, right? Like we can strengthen our own balance sheet. We're the only world government in the entire world that really can print dollars. And why are we not printing dollars to buy Bitcoin? Why do we print, you know, billions of dollars to send to foreign nations to fight wars that aren't ours, in my opinion? I'll probably unpopular opinion, but I don't know that they care that Moon Wallet is there or that they're concerned that I have $10 in Wallet of Satoshi. Like, I don't think that's really what they're after. I think that it's just a land grab to try to scare everyone in the crypto space or in the Bitcoin space that, you know, that we are doing something that's illicit, that we are breaking some sort of law, which you and I know is just not the case.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, it's interesting that you brought up like essentially printing money to buy Bitcoin, because it seems like that's this strategy Michael Saylor has started to implement with his convertible notes on MicroStrategy, basically utilizing debt to buy more Bitcoin and just to keep on doing that. You know, I actually tweeted this out like just before we came on here, and I've gotten kind of mixed reviews on that, because some people think like, all right, you're utilizing the traditional financial tools, and which is opinion, I believe, to basically, you know, buy up new Bitcoin, almost like shorting the traditional system in order to get into the new system. Well, you know, there's still that exchange rate and there's kind of like hairiness there, right? Where everything's still priced in the dollar and whatnot. So you're essentially shorting MicroStrategy debt and, to buy Bitcoin. Well, on the flip side of things, if the US were to print money and buy Bitcoin, wouldn't that just like flip the system all on its head and almost cause like an immediate collapse and kind of accelerate that Bitcoin adoption? And that in turn would be almost bad for the US? Or do you see that as like, you know, maybe a potential positive, because no matter which way it goes, it would like inflate the Bitcoin price, which would make number go up. Are you looking for the best way to store your seed phrase? Well, I've got it for you. It's Stampseed. They've got the number one punch place where you can order a full on package where they've got every single thing. They've got all the letters. You could just get it in there. And they've got this sick hammer, which they've engineered to make it so easy for you to punch in that titanium steel plate and store your seed phrase in the most secure way possible. So go ahead and get your Bitcoin off of these exchanges and use promo code GREENCANDLE for 15% off. They're helping power the show. They've got the Bitcoin logo. You can punch it into your seed phrase as well if you could see it here. They've got a lot of cool stuff. And now I'm helping empower you to get your Bitcoin off an exchange utilizing Stampseed and storing your seed phrase in the most secure way possible. Now get to it. All right, back to the show.
Well, okay, let's think about it this way. What would happen if the U.S. announced that they were, you know, there was a new gold rush and they were buying gold to back our dollar, right? What would the public think of that action, right? What would the global public think of that action, right? I mean, we hear that China and Russia and India are increasing their stock of gold. What does that make us think, right? It doesn't make us think that their currencies are weaker. It makes us think that they are a stronger entity. They are stronger entities. And so I believe that you know, Bitcoin is not is not yet a threat to the dollar, I think certainly from our nation state, we can hold Bitcoin in our treasury and strengthen strengthen our nation and strengthen the perception of our nation globally. You know, again, I mean, how can we maintain a strong military presence? How can we have, you know, advanced defense tech? How can we have incredible intelligence and strategic alliances if we are broke? You know, nobody wants to align with the person that they view as weak. So it's, you know, I do think that eventually we are a Bitcoin world, but I don't know how long that takes. And what do you think? How long do you think it takes before the whole world is on Bitcoin?
Oh, I think it's long ways away, right? I mean, I know like Parker Lewis has the gradually then suddenly. I think we're still, you know, far away. I mean, I, you know, kind of deal with the traditional world, I guess, the non-Bitcoin world in my day job. And, you know, everybody's still kind of going through the motions there, right? I mean, we still have people thinking like everything's fine, you know, that the average person is not really doing that bad, you know, that they can save or whatever. I think, you know, pockets of people are starting to wake up. But I think majority of people, just like you said at the beginning, they don't really like to think about money. They don't like to think about like the greater issues of the world. They just want to go do their job and, you know, work 9 to 5 and then come home, watch Netflix and kind of escape. And so because of all that, I think, you know, I think, you know, we're still looking at 30, 40, maybe even 50 years down the road before we get there. And I think, you know, hopefully it's like a slower transition, because I think there's like two ways we get to a full Bitcoin standard. It's either the current system we're in totally collapses and it's like, you know, we're in flux for, you know, a decade and it's, or maybe even more, and it's a lot of pain, or it's a slower transition over where just, you know, we see countries like El Salvador pop up and other countries, you know, maybe in Argentina and like some of these smaller ones start building until eventually, you know, majority of countries are just utilizing Bitcoin. But I mean, like taking El Salvador for an example, you know, it's been legal tender for 2.5, almost 3 years, and there's maybe 5 to 10% of vendors that accept Bitcoin there. So, I mean, that's a great amount. You know, I think it gets understated and kind of diminished how many vendors accept Bitcoin down there. But, you know, it's a lot better than the US, where we have less than 1%. I just think, you know, as things grow, it takes a lot of time until, you know, a country, whether it makes it legal tender or what have you, will fully get there on its own. And I think like it'll just be a slow transition for everybody as well. So do you kind of, I guess, subscribe to that theory as well? Or do you think it's going to be the more gradually than settling?
Okay, so let's go back to what you just said. You said, well, you know, El Salvador made it legal tender a couple of years ago, but yet a small number of vendors are actually accepting it. But what is our perception, the US perception, maybe it's just limited to Bitcoiners, but what is the perception of El Salvador today versus the perception of El Salvador 10 years ago?
Yeah, 100%.
We view it as much stronger, right? We view this complete transformational project that has been El Salvador over the last, whatever it's been, since Bukele came into office. I mean, if folks have not watched the Tucker Carlson with Bukele, like that needs, you just turn this off, sorry. After you're finished with this, like go watch that. You know, it's incredible to me how El Salvador was able to round up all of their gangs. They really had a very small police force. They had no real standing military. They have no nuclear weapons, right? They have no Department of Defense that's littered with generals and admirals that went to West Point and the Naval Academy and, you know, all of these grand institutions these places that have been a signal of strength. Like, they have none of that. And yet they got their country. I think he said that it's their murder rate is like 2 out of 100. Like it was the most dangerous country on earth. And it is not the safest, but one of the safest. It is the safest in our part of the world. I think maybe Switzerland is safer and some places in Europe, but I mean, it's a lot safer than the US. You don't see people breaking into, there's no footage of folks breaking into the local stores in El Salvador, stealing stuff, and the police just standing around looking at them going, this is normal, right? Go watch the Bukele interview with Tucker. It's, the perception is that El Salvador is gaining strength. And so whether or not they've got people that are accepting it, accepting Bitcoin, for a good that they produce, I don't think it's irrelevant, but I think the perception of strength by other nations is a leading indicator of what would happen to any nation that adopted Bitcoin. Again, to your point, much like the perception that people have about MicroStrategy. Who knew about MicroStrategy 10 years ago? I didn't. I mean, and I feel like I have not been, I didn't work as an investment advisor. Wasn't in that realm, but certainly very aware of what, the technology development looked like in the U.S. The friend that I was with this on Sunday night, who is an advisor for a huge foundation, like he barely understands MicroStrategy. He has no insight into what they're doing, but it's clear that what they're doing is the cheat code to a resilient company. And we've now seen others follow. We've seen, I don't know how many funds, Millennium and others, 30 something or 50 something funds who now have a substantial allocation to Bitcoin. Like it's a perception of strength. And that's what I think is most important for, that is the reason why I feel like the US needs to add it to our treasury.
No, I mean, I agree with you. But do you think that that's all kind of, I guess, revolved around a Bitcoin for like a nation state? Because I think the strength of the U.S. was always kind of around the military. And obviously, the way we left Afghanistan recently, a lot of things have been kind of waning, especially the strength of the U.S. I still think, it's the greatest country on earth and it's the greatest place to become an entrepreneur and grow companies and businesses. And, I hope that the next president, whoever that may be, will continue that and continue to make it more advantageous. But, we've seen, Bukele, to your point, like kind of come with open arms for tech and innovation and everything like that, like limiting the amount of taxation. We've seen a few businesses move down there. Granted, I don't think we're going to see like, flocks of major businesses outside of the Bitcoin world move down there. But do you think that that's a growing trend that we need to get on as well, where, we're kind of more accepting of the innovative things and we're kind of stopping limiting that because, there's been a lot of policies lately that have done the opposite, kind of pushed us away. So do you think that that's where, in the U.S. needs to move towards in order to, not only gain strength in the Bitcoin and the crypto community, to a lesser extent, the crypto community, but, kind of bring everything back and make the U.S. the power that it once was. Are you looking for the easiest way to get your Bitcoin off an exchange? Well, I've got it for you. It's Foundation Devices. They've got the number one hardware wallet in the Passport. They've even got a concierge service that can help you get your Bitcoin off an exchange within 1 hour private onboarding session. And they've got a great app too, which will give you extremely, extremely, extremely private features on that app, so you can use Bitcoin in the most secure way possible. So I've been working hard trying to get sponsors to help you get your Bitcoin off an exchange, and I found it with Foundation. And you can store your seed phrase with a stamp seed punch plate as well. So pair all those together, use promo code GreenCandle at foundation.xyz, and you'll get $10 off your entire order. All right, that's enough for me. Back to the show.
Yeah. So when you think about the economic security in a country, right, you have economic stability. So we have to be able to provide jobs, right? Citizens need to be able to have basic necessities. We need to foster investor confidence from around the world. Then we need an industrial base for manufacturing. We need to be a place that's friendly for businesses to be successful. And we need energy independence. So all of those are part of the economic security of any country. We have been known for the innovation that takes place here. I think we're also, you know, obviously you've mentioned military several times, but also innovation and also our academic systems, right? We've produced amazing scholars and, you know, as the mom of a college age child, like not all of those kids who attend these shiny schools are getting out and getting jobs. Many are going to take, you know, hourly wage jobs with at places that they never thought that they'd work. And why is that? It's, you know, why would we do anything to thwart innovation and to thwart a sector that not only provides for, you know, basic necessities like jobs and income and, you know, a social system that isn't full of injustices or crime, but one that is, you know, again, that is viewed by others as a stable place where, you know, here's where innovation happens. Here's where leaders live. Here's where people build amazing quality of life. And I think, you know, maybe for us, a few minutes ago, you said something about, you know, people just don't see it. And I think that for us, we are able to maybe see it because we're living in two systems. You know, Jeff Booth says famously, you can't see the system from within the system. I feel like I live two different lives. I feel like I live this life inside of the Bitcoin community. And then I live my normal life, right, with my family. And I spend a lot of time at a public hospital that's here in Houston with one of my family members. And I look at those nurses that are down there who are union members who, you know, maybe make $18 or $22 an hour and then pay tax on that. And they're tired. And they're like in these hopeless, almost dead-end jobs because the world around them is so expensive. Like there's no way out. Like when did we turn into this country where we feel like we're just in a downward spiral? Like this is supposed to be the place where dreams can flourish, right? The land of opportunity. Who actually lives that life anymore outside of the Bitcoin community? I mean, to me, that's the best thing about Bitcoin is that it, once you see it, you have this sense of hope and purpose. And I think this is why you are here today and I'm here today, right? Like we have this sense of hope and purpose that this is the only way out, right? Bitcoin is the way. If we want to be back to a place where, you know, America is the land of flourishing dreams, we must have Bitcoin.
Yeah, and that's well said, and I love that. But yeah, I mean, I agree with you 100% too, because, you know, I mean, I remember my grandparents, and even like when I was a little bit younger, my parents would talk about, you know, saving your way to, you know, basically, you know, being frugal, kind of putting it in the bank account, it's safe, secure. to be honest, like we've kind of turned into a gambling country because of that, right? I mean, we've seen the emergence of a lot of, you know, gambling things pop up. We've seen the emergence of, you know, the shit coins, crypto tokens, kind of people going into that with the GME craze. And I think that's, you know, product of the environment that we're in, because you can't save your way to financial freedom and wealth. People feel like there is no way out. They're looking to make a quick buck because of that. And I think that kind of starts the degradation of the society that we're in, is like, you know, because of the fiat system and just like losing the value of your dollar, you go and spend it on ridiculous things because, hey, your dollar is going to be worth less tomorrow than it is today. And I think that's just kind of, unfortunately, the way we're going. But yeah, like you said, I think Bitcoin is the way out. Bitcoin is the greatest savings technology there is on planet Earth and ever been created. So, and I think, you know, more people are going to wake up for that as they look for a solution. And one of those great solutions that you can kind of, you know, take advantage of is the self-custody aspect of it. And I kind of want to get into that because you have a lot of experience working in that realm. And it seems like there is some hairiness around the, you know, the regulations around that. It seems like they're kind of trying to discourage self-custody, you know, whether it's like the KYC requirements or whatnot, you know, Whirlpool stuff, you know, attacking a lot of these, you know, developers who are helping you. Now, I wouldn't say, I don't know what a better way word is than try to hide it, I guess, but to try to keep, you know, your wallet private and secure. So, you know, do you view it as that, as more of an attack on, you know, the Bitcoin banking system, so to speak, of holding your own keys and going at it that way? Or do you think it's, kind of like what I was saying earlier, that they just want to know what you have and where you have it? Are you looking for the number one place to find all the information you can about Bitcoin, whether it's price, whether it's hash rate, whether it's the latest up to date things outside of Bitcoin, whether it's nation state adoption, what have you? Well, I've got the place for you. Check out bitcoinnews.com. They've even got the number one newsletter in the game when it comes to Bitcoin, because it gives you all the up-to-date information on every single thing that happened in the past week. That'll come to your inbox every single Monday morning. You could sign up using this code right down here or this link. It's also in the show notes. So come join me and thousands of other people that are getting the most up-to-date information from bitcoinnews.com and their newsletter. All right, let's get back to the show.
Yeah, they want to know what you have and where you have it. You know, I don't know. I don't know what they... I don't know what their long game is to understand who has what Bitcoin, right? Like, how can they go back to somebody that mined Bitcoin in 2010 or 2011, right? All these OGs out there that have had Bitcoin for so long. I mean, maybe they've KYC'd somewhere. Maybe they've hit an on or an off ramp somewhere that has triggered a KYC, and thus you can find the identity of the person. Again, I think it's like, what rights do we expect in the United States? What is our right to privacy? You know, I don't know anyone in Bitcoin who sits around and goes, oh, I want to cheat the government. I don't want to pay taxes. I mean, certainly we all say, oh my God, taxes. I don't think that's our primary concern, right? I think that we're focused on is stop debasing our currency. Stop making my life harder. Stop making, you know, food more expensive. Stop making healthcare not only unaffordable, but, you know, pathetic, right? Like, stop taking hope away from every American. That is what I feel like our focus should be on, not arguing over KYC at this point. Do I think that eventually, you know, KYC is a thing of the past? I don't know, but I hope so, right? I think it's a huge invasion of privacy. I understand why maybe they did it. I don't know. That's not the fight I'm in. The fight I'm in is quit debasing the currency. And if you're going to keep doing it, then I'm going to hold my economic value and my energy in something else. And whether or not I hold that in cash or gold bars or Bitcoin or, you know, I buy every Apple iPhone at the store. Like, that's up to me. You shouldn't be able to tell me how to store my economic energy. I get up, I have coffee, I go to work, you know, I get paid, right? What I do with that, those dollars that are an expression of my energy is, frankly, it's my business. So I don't know. I think, like, again, they've kind of lost the plot. Like, if we're already arguing over, if the US government is so finely focused on catching people that self-custody, like, I don't know. They've lost the plot. I think self-custody is the way. It's not hard. Anyone can do it. I think multi-sig is, you know, it is what all public companies will end up doing. Right now, the public companies in ETFs, you know, as folks widely know, are using very large custodians. I think the risks that are inherent in those custodians is enormous. I'm not quite sure we're considering that, you know, there could be folks inside those custodians laying in wait to capture that Bitcoin when the time is right. You know, Dhruv Bansal at Unchained talks about don't distribute the coins, distribute the keys. I do think that a distributed key setup will be the future for individuals and for publics. You know, we have to be fundamentally aware of what Bitcoin was solving for ultimately, and that is counterparty risk, no matter how you define it. If you view counterparty risk as someone debasing your currency, or counterparty risk as someone that's, you know, involved in the security scheme of you holding Bitcoin, Bitcoin solves for counterparty risk. And you know, how you hold your Bitcoin, to me, is as important as holding Bitcoin.
And I agree with you there, right? Because if you have it in an ETF or you have it in some of these other places, right, you're basically having paper Bitcoin. You're not necessarily holding the true asset. So, I mean, I agree with you 100%. If you want the true power of Bitcoin, you need to hold it yourself, whether that's, you know, a multi-sig setup or even, you know, how, depending on your risk tolerance, you know, a single key setup or whatever, but holding it, you know, on your own, I think is the true power of it all. But it is interesting that you say that, you know, countries and, you know, institutions should hold it, you know, have a distributed multi-sig setup. Now, I feel like with like the SEC regulations and everything like that, like a MicroStrategy, for example, they wouldn't be able to do that just yet as things are set up because, you know, if somebody, you know, Sally, whoever has the keys at MicroStrategy were to lose that key or whatever and set it up in a way that, you know, you need two of three or whatever and they don't have theirs, you know, they would like somebody to essentially like point the finger at to get, you know, insurance back on their Bitcoin. Now, am I just like missing the whole point here, or you know, is there more complex multi-sig setups where you could avoid something like that? And even, you know, as employees are coming in and out of that company, that you know, you can set it up in a way where, you know, MicroStrategy could eventually hold all their keys, and Michael Saylor could, you know, although he would be the head face and everything like that, he wouldn't necessarily have the power to move all of that.
Well, what if you had qualified custodians, right? What if there were 10 qualified custodians to choose from and MicroStrategy didn't have to hold a key at all, right? A multi-sig could be set up in, you know, M of N, right? It takes 9 out of 10 keys to sign. It could be 2 of 3. But what if they used qualified custodians to hold those keys? Then no individual key holder could move Bitcoin.
Well, then in that case, that would be, yeah, I guess like then how would that be super beneficial for the company? as they're basically having their treasury reserve where no single person would be able to move that Bitcoin. Now, I feel like the treasury is there for essentially like emergency situations or, you know, almost like a backup plan. So if that was the case, you know, maybe they're, I don't know, maybe MicroStrategy eventually starts paying their employees in Bitcoin. Like that's kind of the way that I see it going. So in that, I don't know, maybe that I'm making a lot of assumptions here, but, you know, I guess how would that like in turn, like benefit MicroStrategy if they don't have, you know, a way to essentially move that money, then how is that better than the current banking system?
No, they have a way to move the Bitcoin, right? I mean, what we're talking about with a distributed key, I mean, you still have complete flexibility and your Bitcoin is movable. There are qualified custodians where, you know, it may, I don't know, maybe it takes 2 hours, maybe it takes 2 days to sign the transaction so that Bitcoin is movable. You know, in my experience working with publics and working with large funds that hold Bitcoin, you know, they often hold some in a hot wallet and a lot in a cold wallet, right? That hot wallet is so that they have the ability, let's say that Bitcoin goes to, you know, $1 million overnight, and you're a fund and you're invested in companies in the Bitcoin space. If it goes to $1 million, I'm going to sell some, right? Because I'm going to deploy it into new opportunities in the Bitcoin space. So you're not locked out of your Bitcoin, and it's not at all like being in a traditional financial ecosystem where you have no control. In all cases, Bitcoin is viewable on the blockchain. So if I'm MicroStrategy and I've distributed keys, you know, they would have the ability to have insight into their wallet address at all times. They could verify every day, every minute that their Bitcoin was there, and they could verify that it hasn't been moved.
Yeah, that makes sense. And then, yeah, I mean, I was just kind of thinking then too, that the traditional financial systems, you know, as it is now, right? I mean, to move $1 million, if you have that in a hot wallet, you know, I mean, to move that in a banking system probably takes like 3 to 7 business days at the very least, which, you know, if you can move it immediately, and then even if you have it in a cold wallet and it only takes a couple business days, it's a lot quicker than the traditional system. So it would be a drastic improvement on that. And, you know, we kind of got away from El Salvador and moved into more of like traditional businesses, but I want to take it back to nation states and the nation state adoption, because we've seen companies kind of bring Bitcoin onto their balance sheet. We saw 3 recently pop up, like Metaplanet, Semler Scientific, and one other that's escaping me. But, you know, with the success that we talked about previously with El Salvador, now that has, you know, changed the perception. We've seen Bukele go on Tucker, but Bitcoin was like kind of barely mentioned in that. It was a lot about their policies and kind of the movement on that. Do you think, you know, the public perception is just more on, you know, Bukele kind of coming in and flipping El Salvador on its head? Or do you think people are more equating it to, like, you know, one of the steps is Bitcoin, which is kind of, you know, around the ethos? Like, do you think that those are, I guess, in a sense, hand in hand? Are you looking for the best way to orange pill your friends and family? Well, I've got a way for you that's got a little bit of a nostalgia factor. I've got Bitcoin trading cards. They've got the Genesis pack. I've got an open pack right here sitting here where you can hand out a bunch of these cards with some great, great artwork. We've got Tyranny. We've got Fear, Uncertainty, and Doubt right here, the FUD card. So we've got a lot of great things to teach you a bunch of lessons about Bitcoin in the current space. And they've even got some cool things of cool people even doing some stuff in the Bitcoin space. I've got the Bitcoin racing card here, even signed by my boy, Chris Primetime McKenzie. So you can get all of that at btc-tc.com. Use promo code GREENCANDLE. You can get 10% off your entire order to orange pill your friends and family and collect some cool artwork of people that are doing some awesome stuff in the Bitcoin space and help spread that orange pill around the globe. All right, enough from me. Back to the show.
I think it's 100% due to Bitcoin. I mean, he wouldn't have had the economic horsepower he would not have the longevity of economic horsepower to make these changes without Bitcoin, right? It's 100%. And, you know, nation states are following, will follow. And maybe it's baby steps, right? Maybe it's, you know, Marathon has recently announced, several months ago, they announced a deal, a collaboration with the UAE. They've recently announced a public-private partnership with Kenya. Those are solving real-world energy problems for those nations. And so for those citizens. So, you know, I always tell people when I'm explaining Bitcoin, like if I'm talking to an energy person, which, you know, a lot of my friends are in the energy space, and I'll say, you know, look, if you run an energy company, you don't need to like Bitcoin to appreciate what Bitcoin mining can do for you, how it is accretive to your business model, right? If I am a natural gas processing plant and I have excess energy that's just sitting idle because maybe maybe the gas processing plant was set up and I have access to 20 megawatts or 50 megawatts of power, but I only process 5 megawatts worth of gas, right? It takes me 5 megawatts to process gas. I have excess energy and I have paid for all of that infrastructure. So why would I not consider a JV to sell that excess energy to a Bitcoin miner? Or why not stand up some mining of my own, right? And all of the energy companies are starting to investigate or have investigated or are building out their Bitcoin mining. So you can hate Bitcoin and you can still believe Elizabeth Warren, but realize that it's really good for your business. And, you know, I use the phrase monetize every molecule, right? You can monetize every molecule by using Bitcoin mining. It is literally like a portable midstream operator. So if I'm a gas producer, and this could be anywhere in the world, right? If I have natural gas and I have no pipeline or I have inadequate takeaway for my gas supply, I can use Bitcoin mining to monetize those molecules, right? I just turn the natural gas into another form of energy, which is Bitcoin. I'm not sure if I answered your question.
No, you did 100%. And I agree. And I think, you know, you're in a Houston area that's, you know, very energy dense, oil and gas. I mean, it seems like it should go hand in hand. And I think energy companies are starting to come around. I mean, we have the Bitcoin conference coming up here in about a month. And, you know, one of the top sponsors is Shell. So, I mean, that's, you know, it should tell you enough in itself there, where it's like, you know, the traditional oil and gas industries are seeing the value of, you know, utilizing the excess energy and the, you know, in a sense, monetizing every molecule. So I think, like, you know, that world kind of is starting to get it and is coming around to it, whether they believe in Bitcoin or not. You know, it's all about money at the end of the day, right? So, you know, being in that area, it seems like that should be an easier conversation. Is that in your experience, like, that the oil and gas, the energy guys, they essentially just get it a lot quicker?
No, I wouldn't say that they do. You know, even if they've started to, and many of them have investigated Bitcoin, are investigating Bitcoin, do have teams focused on it, it's often hard to look at a financial model and think that this makes sense, right? Because you see the halving every 4 years and you see the volatility of price. And so they start to go, ugh. You do have to have some belief. You do have to have a real long-term thesis on Bitcoin. I think for them to embrace Bitcoin and not just maybe they'll do a JV, right? If I'm a gas processing plant, a gas compressor station, if I'm a power generator, maybe I do a JV with a Bitcoin miner and I just sell the excess energy. right? That's easy peasy. Let me just sell the excess energy and that's accretive to the energy producer. I don't think we're at the place yet where they're laser-eyed, orange-pilled, Michael Saylor, this is the way. That, you know, I think that's the thesis you and I and our entire Bitcoin community shares. So these aren't fast things to happen. It wasn't a fast process for me to understand Bitcoin. Maybe yours was, but it took me a long time and a lot of kind of false starts to really understand that this is the only way that I ever want to preserve my own economic energy. Like, I don't care what NVIDIA stock does. It matters not to me what the Federal Reserve does. That to me is noise. And I'd rather be, reading a book or working in my garden or going to lift weights or Pilates, right? Like, I don't want that noise in my life. And quite honestly, no one needs it in their life ever again. We don't need to send kids to get an MBA to be economic engineers in a world of sound money. Right. Like, maybe people find that interesting, but the pressure should not be on people to go get these high paying, soul killing jobs. You know, the life is such a gift. Like, let's all figure out how to live our highest purpose, and figuring out how to preserve our own economic energy. You know, if I'm buying GameStop, oh, and that's going to, you know, make me rich. Like, why do we allow that garbage to float around in our brain when you have the alternative of holding the safest, most scarce, precious asset on earth?
Yeah, that's very well said. But, we do have a lot of great things going on in the Bitcoin space. And we've kind of talked about, you know, the current system almost collapsing a bit. But I want to end it on a high note. So what is something that you're seeing in the Bitcoin space that's making you super bullish going forward?
What makes me super bullish is the number of young people that are out there spreading this message. You know, I was glued to Twitter. I couldn't be at Prague this year. In fact, I've never been to Prague. I'm dying to go, but last 2 years I haven't been able to go. The number of young people, I mean, Jack Mahler's moderated a panel of kids that were like 14 years old. Like, what is more bullish than that? You know, they are kids of the digital world. And so I'm not at all bothered when people who are, you know, 50, 60, 70, whatever your age is, I'm not at all bothered. Like, if you went to a Blockbuster store and picked out a movie and you don't understand Bitcoin, like, okay, I got it. I understand. You grew up in the analog world. This isn't a natural thing. This may take you a little more time, right? It took me time. But, you know, if you're 14 and you live in the digital world and everything that you've ever done is digital, every picture you've ever taken, you've never taken a little yellow roll of film to the drugstore or to Fox Photo to get it developed, right? Like, those kids will never do that. You know, the only person I've seen who's actually had a camera recently was Parker Lewis posting from Prague that he took his Polaroid camera. I mean, I love that. But, you know, those kids that were there, they live in a digital world. Of course, they're going to have digital money. And beyond the digital aspect of it, they realize the power of it. They realize that, you know, their future can be protected, and all they have to do is own Bitcoin. Right? Like, I'm mother of a college age daughter. It's frightfully expensive to go to college. I really hope that that we stop this stress factory of trying to get our kids into college, the stress our kids feel about going to college. You know, I don't know if somebody out there has done the math on what if we took, you know, college tuition and just bought Bitcoin, and our kids, you know, did not go to college. Maybe they do go to work at a Starbucks, or they, I don't know what the math is on that, but I would have to bet that owning Bitcoin, if you are 20, if you are 14, if you're whatever, you know, kind of in that educational age group, I would bet you that owning Bitcoin is the most powerful thing that you can do for your future, bar none.
There we go. I love that. And you've been very generous with the time. So I think that this is a great place to wrap it up. So Lisa, why don't you tell people what you got going on and where they can find you? And also too, you were talking about, you know, the older age. I actually got your trading card here too. Oh. There we go. So shout out to Bitcoin Trading Cards. So, you know, they've got you there, and a little nostalgia factor for me, because I grew up, you know, collecting baseball cards. I don't even know if kids do that anymore, but yeah, it's awesome stuff. So yeah, why don't you tell people where they could find you and what you got going on?
I love the Bitcoin trading cards, guys. I love Aladdin. They did an excellent job airbrushing that card, by the way. It's fantastic. Well, I'm speaking at the Bitcoin conference, and at there's a mining conference the day before Bitmine Converge. I think it's Marshall Long and Stephen McClurg are hosting a conference before the main conference. And I'll be at a ton of events. Me Premier Bitcoin, Generation Bitcoin, Bitcoin Students Network, the Veterans event. Yeah, if I can ever be helpful, hit me up on Twitter, hit me up on LinkedIn. The greatest privilege that I have had in my kind of, you know, short sphere of time spent in Bitcoin, because I feel like I got into Bitcoin yesterday, compared to all these OGs. But the biggest privilege that I have had is being able to speak with folks that are builders, founders, thinking about working in Bitcoin. Like, it's a blast. That makes me bullish.
100%. And I'll put all that in the show notes, and I'll actually see you at the conference in Nashville. Maybe we should do some in-person stuff. I'll be there gallivanting around that city and figuring things out too. So Lisa, thank you so much.
Yeah. Congrats on your podcast. It's incredible. I went back and watched several of them. They're incredible. So congrats. Keep it up.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Thanks so much for tuning in to this great episode. If you enjoyed this one and you want some more content, click on the link right here and check out my latest interview with Tom Luongo. We get into it all. If you've known Tom, he's a wild one, so stay tuned. And if you found some value in this podcast, please smash that like button, hit that subscribe button so you get notified of the next videos. All right, I'll catch you at the next one.